This Honest Money podcast is brought to you by Prescient Investment Management, informed by science, guided by insight. Prescient Investment Management is a registered financial service provider.
Welcome to another episode of Honest Money. We're talking about one of my favorite dinner time or braai conversations, and that is market timing. And I'm going to explain that in a little bit now. And I've got some backup for me today to help me talk about this topic. So I'm very thrilled to for the second time invite Ray Merrer, who's the head of retail at Prescient Investment Management. Ray, thanks so much for joining us and for being so brave to come back. I know it's a terrifying thing to be on a podcast with me, but I'm glad that you braved it and are joining us again.
Thanks, Warren. I didn't think I did so well last time.
No. I'm pretty sure the audience rankings are in the top 1,000%, and you'll be getting lots of marriage proposals soon. So we're talking about market timing, and I think maybe just to give a bit of context to this, you know, market timing is something that is so obvious and so easy once it's happened, once we've got perfect hindsight, and it impacts on many different aspects of investment. So, for example, when stock markets are crashing, you know, then we look at it and we go, well, that was obvious that the markets were going to crash. And, you know, any idiot could have predicted that the market was going to fall on the 14th of October, you know, 2019 at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, how could you have got it wrong? You know, similarly around the rand, you know, when it's one of the questions I get asked all the time by investors is, what's the rand going to do tomorrow? What's the rand going to do for the rest of the year or the month or whatever it is? And all of those are market timing conversations. And if it's so easy and so obvious with hindsight, Ray, I mean, is it an investment strategy that we can actually implement on a reliable basis?
Warren, there are very few more controversial topics in investment management than market timing. I suppose some people think it's absolutely impossible and others think that they can do it perfectly. And of course, they'll charge you a small fortune to do it for you. My opinion, look, I think the thing is, it's probably impossible to do it correct consistently over time, all the time. If you could, you probably would be, if you and I could do it, we'd be sitting on an island sipping mocktails right now.
Well, I don't think I'd be sipping the mocktail, but I'll go with you there. I think it's one of those things that if we look at the academics, you know, and we look at the studies around this, there are probably two studies that I really love, and one's a very old one, very controversial, but I think very valid. Called, and I'm going to say it slowly if people are listening and want to Google it, and it's called Brinson, Hood, and Bebauer. Let me repeat, it's three academics, Brinson, Hood, and Bebauer. And they looked at this, what moves big pools of money up or down over long periods of time. And when they attributed the kind of drivers of moving portfolios of money up or down, what they found were three key factors. And the one was something you and I have discussed on an earlier show, and that was the asset mix or asset allocation decision. The second one is choosing the right share, the right bond, the right property. So broadly, you know, stock picking. And then the last factor was market timing. And what they found was in the real world with real money, market timing has a 2% impact on moving money up or down over a long period of time. Now, 2%, to give you an idea, with something as complex as investing money, 2% is not worth focusing on. You know, you should, if you want to focus on 2%, focus on how you reduce costs by 2%. Don't try and get a 2% movement in your money from becoming a market timer, because that might derail an entire investment plan. You know, if you consistently focus on market timing, the likelihood is you lose money consistently over long periods of time. You don't make money. And I think it's a key point here. You know, the other academic kind of basis that I think is important is something called the behavior gap. And it's a company called Dalbar that analyzed the behavior gap every year. And I would encourage our listeners to go and do a little bit of Googling on it, because, you know, the behavior gap costs investors about half of the returns that they could get. And I believe it's partly about a failure to manage emotions around investments. And I think that's an important thing. But secondly, it's this temptation to be a market timer. And I think, you know, Ray, when we look at this and we talk about investments, you and I, we talk about it a lot. You know, market timing, you're right. It is controversial. It is a debatable point. But I think it's because it's so obvious in hindsight. I'm not convinced that it's obvious with foresight, that you can sit down and make a calculated decision with confidence.
I agree, Warren. And in fact, for those people who actually would waste their time on that 2%, another study was done by, I think it was an American asset manager called Charles Schwab, where they, in 2021, looked at the five different investment strategies over a 20-year period. The first one was looking back over 20 years and investing at the perfect time in the market, which is obviously the low point. So investing $2,000 at the lowest point of the market every year. The second strategy was investing $2,000 per year, but on the first day of trading of the market. So in this case, in South Africa, early January, you invest $2,000 every year for 20 years. The third one, they decided to divide your $2,000 by 12 and invest it on the first day of the month every year. So it's about $166 a month every year. And then the fourth strategy was if you did the opposite of number one, and you invested at the highest point of the market, so the worst point to invest. Every year, you put in your $2,000 for 20 years. And then the fifth one was not investing at all and putting your money in cash. Now, like you just said, obviously, if you had perfect hindsight, the number one would have won because they would have invested at every single point in the market at the lowest point. But that is a very difficult thing to do, as we've said, and to do it well and consistently and on time every single time is virtually impossible. What they actually saw was number two and three. So number two was the person who invested $2,000 on the first trading day of the month. And then number three was the person who split their money into 12 portions and invested on the first trading day every month. They weren't too far off. Like you said, with that extra amount, that I think they said that those two strategies were within 11% of the first strategy. So it wasn't, for the amount of time and effort you try and kind of time the market, it's not really worth it. And then for the fourth investor, so people think that sitting in cash, you may be better off than investing at the worst time in the market. But actually, even the person who invested at the worst time once a year in the market still ended up being three times higher than the person just sitting in cash, avoiding the market completely.
So I think there are a couple of big key lessons there. And one is, you know, if you don't know what to do, you don't know what the state of markets are, then doing nothing is still a terrible outcome. You're still going to get a really lousy investment return. And that's the example of the person sitting in cash. So if you don't know what to do, and the truth is we as investors need to be fairly humble in the investment markets because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Forget about what's going to happen over a decade. And so, you know, maybe the key is if you don't know how you want to invest or what's going to happen in markets, then do the regular thing. In other words, do a monthly debit order or invest every 6 months or every year at least. You know, but don't sit on the sidelines waiting because then you're practicing the art of market timing. Then you're practicing what we know is going to work perfectly against you, not in your favor. And so I think that, you know, it's a key point here. The I don't know answer or I'm going to wait for things to get better kind of suggestion. Unfortunately, when the media tells us that things are better, it's usually, once the stock markets have already had a nice big run, because stock markets start to recover and things start to get better in markets long before the news gets better, long before we as kind of the general population in the world become fairly optimistic again. So you can't wait until the next braai or the next dinner party for your friends to tell you that they're feeling better before you start investing. It's too late by then. And I think the key here is stay invested if you've got money in markets, but critically, if you've got money to invest, don't sit there. Don't sit on the sidelines waiting. It's just an awful strategy. And I think, you know, that study that you're quoting now, Ray, is just such an objective view. You know, it's not, you can't argue the numbers. Don't do it. You know, it's a waste of time.
Yeah. And I'll never forget when I started working probably 12, 15 years ago, our company gave us these papers and we didn't know what to do. They just said, choose a fund. Like most companies, HRs do. They don't tell you what to invest in. They just tell you to do it. And if you were a new starter, you didn't have to do it. You could wait because you had a probation period of a year or something. You didn't have to do anything. Just take all your money and then you can start. It was only compulsory a year later. I decided to start and I remember clearly it was like $500 a month that I had to take off my little salary. And my colleague next door to me, he looked at me and he thought I was crazy. He said, why? Well, they're giving us the option to not pay in for a full year. Can you imagine how much money that is? And sure as Bob, a year later, we looked back and he was starting his and mine had kind of, look, it was only $500 a month, but for us back then, it was actually quite a bit. And what it had done in 12 months versus his, he hadn't even started yet. And I'm sure today when you look back, just that year alone, and even though it was a small amount, just starting for me, I reckon the compound effect of that would be much more. It will come out longer in the longer term.
And you know, I think the interesting thing about market timing is that you know some of the best returns, the best days in stock market history, happen when the world feels like it's falling apart. So you know, if you jump back to kind of 2008, you know, one or two of the very best days in stock market history happened around 2008, when we were in theory hours away from the financial system collapsing in the Western world, and the reason why the market would have a fantastic day would be a piece of news that, you know, the Reserve Bank in America, it's called the Federal Reserve, decided to bail out some financial institutions, or they decided to inject money into the whole economic system in America. It was a completely unpredicted, unforecastable event, and it causes the markets to jump up 8 or 10% on a day. And if you're sitting there and saying, I'm going to wait for things to get better, you're waiting until probably 2011, 2012, once the markets have had a massive recovery before you start investing, because that's about the time that the newspapers and the social media tell you that things are better. And I think it's a key point here. You know, market timing requires three decisions every time you want to be a market timer. You've got to decide to buy an asset when it's cheap. Then you've got to hold it until it becomes expensive. Then you've got to sell it. That's your second decision. And then you've got to make the hardest decision of all. And that is, you've got to buy that asset again when it's cheap again. And in my experience, looking at this, you know, both in South Africa and around the world, both for myself as an investor and all the professional money managers that I monitor, that they might get one or two decisions right. In other words, they might buy something when it's fairly cheap and they might sell it when it's fairly expensive. But almost universally, they all get the last decision wrong. They get to buy that asset again after it's become cheap again, that they make that decision consistently wrong. And it's not because they're bad. It's because it's an impossibility. It's not something we can do as human beings. So I think it's a key point here.
Yeah. And remember, Warren, different people are in the market for different reasons. You know, some guys, they're a day trader. He's trading, you know, by the hour or by the minute, and they're looking for completely different things. So the market, and that's why it's so difficult to time the market, because you may think that something is so obvious and clear, and yet the people on the opposite side of your trade are seeing completely the opposite thing to what you're seeing. And that's why the stock market is not so easy to kind of foresee what's going to happen and believe that you can time it all the time, because there's different people in that market doing different things at different times because it suits them.
And I think, you know, this is the one area that private investors will always have a major advantage over the big institutions. Is a private investor can invest the money according to their own objectives, their own goals in life. And so they're not driven by, you know, some boss telling a day trader or a institutional manager, it's time to make 10% this month before you get fired. You know, if you're a private investor, what you're saying is, I've got a goal which is 5 years or 10 years away. I need to build up capital for that time. What happens in markets in between now and then is not that important to me. I don't need to get every market cycle right. I need to be invested from now for the next decade, and then I need the money. And that means that you can kind of protect yourselves against the emotions of markets, and that's what causes huge losses for people most of the time, is this kind of emotional decision making.
Yeah, and it's that knee-jerk reaction that you decide to – you'd think that you know better than the market. I had okay, this is something I shouldn't admit out loud, but I still do. I had two portfolios, two RAs, because I had one was, I don't know if you remember back in the day before Regulation 28, you could have one account that wasn't grandfathered, and was something that they called grandfathered afterwards. So one could be 100% equities. Whereas today, now with the regulations, you can't go 100% in shares. And I created another one, which was Regulation 28. And I thought I knew smart. I thought I was better than the market. And I decided to do my own asset allocation and my own timing. And in hindsight, when I look at the return between those two investments, which are pretty much, you know, if you look at them from a time period perspective, one just stayed in one investment because I wasn't allowed to get out of it. The other one I was allowed to chop and change, and I did chop and change by myself. And in hindsight, I probably would have done better just having kind of stuck with one fund and stuck out the ride and not thought that I'd known better than the market. And that's my biggest life lesson from comparing two funds. And now that second retirement annuity is now stuck in one fund, and I haven't touched it in about 2 years now. And what do you know? It's actually doing probably better than what would have happened had I been managing it actively myself.
We're changing the name of the show from Honest Money to Money Confessions, and there's our first one, Ray. And I must say, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about stock markets is that the moment we feel like we've got a grip on them, they tend to humble us as fast as possible. It's I imagine it's a bit like having a toddler. You know, you can never feel like you've got this. They'll always find a way to humble you, and markets are exactly the same. So Ray, we're running short on time, and I thought. You know, just to give you the opportunity, if there was something else that we needed to tell our listeners about market timing before I ask you one of my favorite trick questions.
I suppose it's the old cliche: time in the market is much more important than timing the market.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a valuable life lesson. So Ray, I forgot to ask it to you the first time you were on our show, but my favorite question for all of our guests is, if you had to meet your 21-year-old self now, having learned all the life lessons that you've learned, what would be the one thing that you would want to teach yourself, whether it be about markets or about life, what would be the one lesson you would want to give yourself now?
Have you not heard all my confessions?
Only one. You can't give 12.
I think patience is probably something I would tell myself. When I was young, I rushed into things. You know, you listen to your folks, you listen to pundits, you listen to people, buy this, buy that, buy this flat. I mean, I've moved now 3 or 4 times, and every time I thought it was my last move. And in hindsight, it wasn't. And I suppose Warren, you know, I'm about to make another big move from Joburg to Cape Town. And I wish I would tell the younger Ray to be a little more patient before making big decisions. You're not gonna, in hindsight, I know that I probably wouldn't have hurt myself or affected my financial position that much more by having waited before making a few big decisions than the way I did things in the past. I'm one of those go-getter kind of people who likes to get things. Once it's in my mind, it has to be done. And in hindsight, I would have saved myself a lot of lessons and a bit of pain and a few losses if I'd just been a little more patient.
I think it's such a powerful message for our listeners as well, Ray. You know, it's important to have goals, and it's important to be clear about what you want to do. But it doesn't mean you have to rush headlong into these, into decisions straight away. You can make a decision, but it doesn't mean you need to action it. And I think especially for people that are in committed relationships, you know, one of the ways you can manage your own kind of strengths and weaknesses, and especially the weaknesses, is discuss these as a partnership, as a team. Because often, you know, individuals, if you're on your own, you know, the kind of ability to just make a decision and just go with it, there's no one to kind of hold you back and talk to you about these things and soundboard. And I think that's a powerful thing for the world of money is, you know, if you operate as a team and you kind of check your ideas with each other. I know for me, I'm always quick to buy my secondhand cars as fast as possible. And it's my spreadsheet queen wife that will make me be slow on those. And it's always been better to be, you know, the better decision was always to be slow on especially buying decisions. So I think it's a great life lesson. Thank you, Ray. Ray Merritt, head of retail at Prescient Investment Management. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show. I'm hoping that we can lure you onto the show again, we'll chat again.
Thank you, Warren. Really enjoyed that.
Prescient Investment Management, informed by science, guided by insight. Prescient Investment Management is a registered financial service provider.